I want to teach on a saying. A saying to live by, okay? There's lots of them. Here it is. All men make mistakes, but married men find out about them sooner. Or, here's a saying, do not employ handsome servants. These are sayings from different countries. Do not bathe if there is no water. Do not speak of a rhinoceros if there is no tree nearby. An ass is but an ass, though laden with gold. This one is Spanish. When love is not madness, it is not love. And Raleigh knows this one. The dog's kennel is not the place to keep a sausage. I don't know what country this is from. Don't offer me advice. Give me money. And this is Italian. Eating and scratching want but a beginning. If your head is wax, don't walk in the sun. Never rely on the glory of the morning or the smiles of your mother-in-law. And the woman cries before the wedding and the man after. So, I'd like to close with the word of prayer. Sayings to live by. But the saying I want to go over is this one. God first, others second, I am willing to be third. That's the saying. God first, as far as your life goes, a good saying, besides, do not speak of a rhinoceros if there was no tree nearby. You could probably use live by both of these sayings if you wanted to. But one of the sayings you might want to live by, like don't offer me advice, give me money. One of the sayings is, in my life, it's God first, others second, and I am willing to be third. In our lives, we want to have God to be first in our life. Look at Mark 12. The most important part of our lives, the most important aspect of our lives is God. In Mark 12, Mark 12, verse 28. And one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together, and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? You know, the most important. And Jesus answered him, the first of all commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. God would like for us to love who first? With all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. With everything you are, you decide that God is first, that you love God more than anything or anybody else, that the one you love the most, even more than your dog or your parakeet or your girlfriend even, is who? God. You decide, and it's a decision that you love God, that you cherish God, that God is more important to you than anything else. That's God first. That God is just the most important thing in your life. And he's the one you love the most. And he's the one you're the most loyal to. Look at Matthew 6. This is a great way to order your life. That first and foremost, you love God. And first and foremost, you serve God. In Matthew 6, verse 33, it says, But seek you after everything else the kingdom of God. It's in the context of material things. And it's speaking about how most people, their lives, their first priority, most of their effort goes into material things, getting material things. you know, things of this world. But it says, but in contrast, as a believer, we should seek. And to seek is to seek after, to look for. What was the name of that aunt that you were looking for a present for? Aunt Betty. Some of you know that, like...
Aunt Donna.
Oh, I'm sorry, Aunt Donna. Aunt Donna. Some of you, and myself also, will go through like JCPenney's for half an hour looking for a present for someone, right? That's what it is to seek something. Especially, it's hard when you're doing buying anything for an American because Americans already have everything, you know? So you have to seek extra hard. But the word seek means implies effort, that you are willing to put effort, even if it's hard, to find something, right? Like if you lost your contact lens or all of your gold doubloons out of your money pouch, or like if you lost your car in a parking lot, or if you lost your shoes in the sushi restaurant. The way that you would look for something that you really want to find, the way that you would look for something that you just have to find, that's what the word seek is, to seek the things of God. There's been a lot of different ideas about the kingdom of God, but I think we can safely say that it's something about God, right? Something to do with God. Seek ye first God. Like, that's the most important thing. Before you find the quickest way to work or the best job or whatever else, the best girlfriend or the best second girlfriend or whatever, that you're going to put effort into learning about God and finding out about God. That's God first. It's to endeavor to find something. In Psalm 105, we seek God first. That's where our first and best effort goes, into finding out about God, finding out what he's like, finding out what he does, serving him, finding out what he wants us to do. That's the first priority of our life. Psalm 105. Verse 3. Glory in his name. Let the heart of them that rejoice that let the heart of them rejoice that seek thee. Seek who? Here it seek is to search with the desire of obtaining. And with care and attention, to search, seek the Lord and his strength. Carol was talking about, Carol, whatever her last name was talking about God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power. It's obviously available, the power of God, right? But do you desire to have that in your life? As much as you desire a job that pays $100,000 a year? Which would you rather have? I guess you could have both, it doesn't really matter. But this word strength is to strengthen, to make strong or firm. I want to be firm. To give strength to anyone. Seek his strength. Seek the Lord and his strength. To have his strength in your life. Is that for me? If it's my mom, tell her that Donnie is here and he's okay. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek to be strengthened by God, to have the power of God in your life. Seek his face evermore. And face means to really get to know him, like you know someone face to face. That's a good goal for life, to really get to know God. Seek him. Put effort into it. If you have to drive an hour to learn some cool thing, would it be worth it? Well, some people drive an hour to get the perfect Christmas tree, don't they? But that's cool too, because one of the wise men put a stick in the ground in it. Isn't that how it happened? I don't remember. Okay. Psalm 34. It's worth it putting effort into getting to know God. In Psalm 34, verse 8, it says, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good." Taste means to try it out. The more you get to know God, the more you see that he's good. And that means he's pleasant. He causes happiness and joyfulness. God is not the reason for the pain and the hardship of this world. And God is the one who causes joyfulness. God is the one who is pleasant. He causes people to be full of joy and have a happy life. And the more you get to know God, the more you see that that's what he does and that's what he does for your life. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. And blessed means simply to be happy. You learn to trust God. It's worth the effort to get to know God because he's good. You're not going to find out one day that he really has hated you all this time and has been plotting against you. He's really good. He adds to people's lives. He never takes away from anyone's life. And he wants to add to your life and my life. And so it's worth it to put forth the effort to seek him, to find it. People will do all sorts of weird things to get fame, won't they? Or money, or whatever else. What else do people want these days? To work for Donald Trump? They'll go through all sorts of humiliation and everything like that. What would you do to learn about God? Would you risk being fired? You're fired. Would you risk being embarrassed? Would you, you know, get in a race across the continent or something like that? Is it worth the extra effort? The truth is, it really is worth the effort to get to know God. And the more God is a part of your life, the more wonderful and happy and joyous your life is. It really is worth it to put God first and to have learning about God and getting to know God be the first priority in your life. Look at Psalm 27. Whose water is this? Were you watching? Whose water is this? Nobody? Psalm 27, verse 4. One thing have I desired of the Lord, all the treasure of the world. Desire is to ask. One thing I have asked of the Lord, that will I seek after. This is what I'm really after. This is what this guy's life was all about, this guy named David. He was a man after God's own heart. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord. This is a great picture too. To dwell means to sit down, to seat oneself, just to sit down in God's house. That's what I want more than anything else. To sit in the house of the Lord. To dwell in the house of the Lord. To sit down, to seat oneself. To remain or to abide. To hang out with God, the creator of the heavens. That's what I want out of life. I want to hang out with Brad Pitt. Well, I want to hang out with God. Who would you rather get to know? Well, it's a close one, though. Did you see that movie of Troy? And you know, if you could be seen with a movie star, how would you feel about yourself? Hot. Hot, hot, hot. Well, what God says you should be first is that you want to go to God's house and hang out with him. You do that by getting to know him, by getting to know his word and asking him to show you stuff, asking him if he can get to know you and everything. But mainly it's your desire. You know, do you want to? Are you willing to put some effort into it? And anyone who does, it's well worth it. It's to go to the house and sit there and abide a while. That's what I want. I want to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. To behold, and this is to mentally perceive, to mentally perceive the beauty. I want to just see the beauty of God. First of all, do you think there is a God? Do you think he wants you to know him? Then it must be available to mentally perceive some of his beauty. And beauty is what is sweet, what is delightful, what is pleasant. Just how sweet. Do you ever think God could be sweet? God is sweet. He's pleasant. He's delightful. And that's what is seeking God first, is that's what I want more than anything else, to hang around in the house of God and just be able to mentally perceive how sweet he is, how pleasant he is to people, how delightful he is, how good he is, how helpful he is. I want to understand that. I want to perceive that. That's what it's talking about here. That's putting God first. That's having, you know, getting to know God the first priority. To behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in his temple. And inquire means to look into, to look at with pleasure, to behold with admiration. I want to get a glimpse of what God is really like. That's a goal for life, you know, and it can get more and more wonderful all the time. That's available. To get to know God at least a little, to see a little of his beauty, a little of his glory, to see how good he is, to experience his sweetness towards you, to experience what he can do in a person's life, not what religion can do, because religion is like, has very little to do with God many times. What God can do, not what people do, because people have very little to do with God sometimes. What God can do. I want to know what God can do in my life, how sweet that could be, how delightful that could be. You know, Some people try out God and it's all religion and men's ideas and it's just there, get burned. But that's not God. And that's what this is talking about here. In verse, you can turn to verse 5 if you want. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. Look at verse 8. When thou saidest, seek my face. And who said that? That's what he says. My heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. That's what God's looking for. That the number one thing in my life is to see God, to perceive God, to get to know God. And God is spirit. He can't be perceived by the senses. So it's not as easy as some people would like, but it's available when you get born again and have the Spirit of God. It's available to understand and perceive how wonderful God is. And that's what the first priority should be of any human's life and some pets. Psalm 40. Seek God first. That's the first thing. Psalm 40, verse 16. Let all those that seek thee rejoice and be glad in thee. And this is talking about people who seek God, people whose main thing in life is to seek God, they rejoice and are glad. You know, I've seen some believers whose really the main thing in their life is people. To seek people, to hang with people, to be into the people. And they're always disappointed. I don't know why. Maybe it's the people. I don't know. And Psalm 103 says, God knows we're but dust. Maybe dust is disappointing. I don't know. And you put all this effort into finding the coolest believers and they're just dust. It sucks. That's why I'm quitting. Right now. And yet people who seek God, who the first thing in life is to get to know God, they're never disappointed. So are you disappointed? What have you been seeking? Dust? Or dollars, or deadly viruses, or God. To rejoice is to exalt, to be glad. It has the idea of, just what Jerry shared, of springing and leaping. Those guys weren't so blessed just because of the believers. It said at the end of that they were blessed about God. And then they were just blessed to have other people who are their brothers and sisters and stuff like that. It's God first, and that keeps people blessed. And glad here is to be affected with joy and delight. I feel affected by joy and delight. And glad is used in Proverbs 17, which you could turn there if you would like to. I just feel affected by joy and delight, so I'm going to have to titter a little bit. This word glad is the same word as in Proverbs 17:22. A merry heart. It's the word merry. Doeth good like a what? How do you have a merry heart? You seek God. You have your life being about God and learning about God and pursuing a relationship with God. And you have a merry heart. And that's not a name. It's an adjective. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. So you put God first. That's what it's about. That your first priority is not a boy or a girl or a husband or a wife or your chillens. How about that? Your children don't become your God or your job. That your first priority is to get to know God, to seek God. And you're willing to put effort into that and go out of your way to learn more about Him. And you know, that's the main thing about your life, your first loyalty. So that would be the first part of the saying, God first. And then it's others second. Others second, and I am willing to be third. When it comes to our priority, it's not God first and then me, 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 me. It's God first and then others second. Look at Philippians 2. Philippians 2, verse 3. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Here the word esteem is to view or regard. It's talking about how you see other people. And it's not saying that you should see everybody as better than you.
Everybody's better than me, I'm a slime.
It's talking about better is to hold up on high. That the way you look at other believers is like they're important. That's what it's talking about. You see them as important. That's very simple, isn't it? You see them as important. And in your mind you think, their needs are more important than my needs. I'm going to be more concerned about their needs than my own needs. And my life's going to be about, number one, God first, and then helping other people second. And then I'm going to worry about myself, what? Last, third. That's what it's talking about. Look at Matthew 23. This is the parable that Jerry was talking about, where the guy robbed the guy and beat the guy and da 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 da. You're more interested in helping others than getting help yourself. You're more involved in helping others than your own problems. You'd rather go and help someone else with their problem than spend all day trying to work out your own problem. Others second. You care about others. They're important to you. Matthew 23, verse 177. What's that got to do with anything? Well, that's the wrong verse. Where's the parable of the... Oh, it's Luke. Oh, where is it? I lost it. Can someone help me with my problem? Oh, it's Luke 10. I'm sorry. I help myself. See? Luke 10. Thank you. Can someone help me with my memory problem? Luke 10, verse 25. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said unto him, What is written in the law? How readest thou? You're a lawyer. What's the law say? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said unto him, Thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live. Okay? No, not okay. But he, willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, And who is my neighbor? Is he asking, Who should I help? Is that the question? Is he asking, What kind of people should I help? No, he's asking what question? Who is my neighbor? Okay? Who is my neighbor? And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves. The thieves must have been in a pit or something. And fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And I always say, if a positive guy would say he was half alive. But here it says he's half dead. So the guy, if you can picture this, which is why God describes it, he's lying by the side of a road, not a highway, but like a road in the east 2,000 years ago, and his clothes have been robbed, and he's, you know, half dead and naked, beat up. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way. Now, what's a priest supposed to represent? God. He's supposed to represent God. He's supposed to be doing what God, I think this is why Jesus mentioned this, maybe. He's supposed to be doing what God wants people to do. A certain priest, and by chance there came down a certain priest that way. And when he saw him, he what? He passed by on the other side. Can you picture that? He sees this guy, naked and beat up, a guy in need, and if God was like walking down that road, would he have helped the guy? Yeah. And this guy was supposed to represent God, and he passed by. He just went to the other side of the road and went by. He probably had someone else to help later that day. Or maybe he was on his way to Madagascar to help the poor, starving people of Madagascar. You decide that you want to help people, and then you look around, right around you, for people you can help. You know what? You don't have to go to Madagascar to help people. You could probably help someone right in your neighborhood. You could probably help someone right in your house. You could probably help your wife. No, you could probably help your husband. You could probably help your kids if they were more important to you than your own problem. But see, that's one of the things about religion. Religion doesn't really care about people. They care about serving God, but not help people. And you know, they'll go across the sea to help somebody somewhere else, but not their own wife. You know, not their own husband, not their own kids, not the believer who comes to fellowship. And if you want to help people, there's plenty of ways to help. First, you got to decide that you want to help, that you want to be a help to somebody, that other people are more important to you than yourself. God is the most important, and then other people are more important than your own problems and everything like that. And if you're walking down the road and there's a guy naked and wounded, or a guy who needs help, you'll go over there and what? Help him. He's right there. He's right in the grocery store, naked in the grocery store, in the banana section. You're going to go help him. It just amazes me that some people will help everyone else, but their family, their own family is miserable. They're mean to their own family. That's hypocrisy. Go to 1 Timothy 3. You can put your ribbon here. Did I sound like Carol? You can put your ribbon here if you want. First Timothy 3, verse 4. I'm going to go help the Madagascarians. You don't deserve my help, but the Madagascarians do. First Timothy 3, verse 4. No, 1 Timothy 3, verse 4. Qualifications for a bishop. One that ruleth well his own what? That's not talking about beating them. It means he takes care of his own what? Take care of your own house. Put some effort and time into not your reputation with the believers as a helpful person, but your own house, the people in your own house. Like some of you kids, aren't your parents good to you? Couldn't you like help them? Or some of you husbands, couldn't you help your wives and not be called gay? Couldn't you? One that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with gravity. And here's God's point of view. If a man know not how to rule his own house, and that means to take care of his own, so that they're blessed, taken care of, how shall he take care of the church of God? Right? So you don't have to go to Madagascar, and I'm not saying the people of Madagascar need help. I'm not saying that. I don't know. But you don't have to go there to help people. Look around. But you decide that other people's needs are more important than your own. I'm willing to put other people, God first, other people second. Back in Luke 10, and then it's in verse 32, it says, and likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him, and what did he do? This guy looked at the guy a while. Is that what God would want if he saw someone beat up and hurt? But these guys probably had more important things to do with themselves. And passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, and that's just code for lowlife in this culture, someone that a good Jew would never even consider to be human, a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was at, and when he saw him, he had what? You suppose a Samaritan had business elsewhere? Had some place to be? He gave up his time for this person. Even though the Samaritan's time might have been important, he had compassion on him, and he went to him, and he bound up his wounds, put effort, some of his effort into it, bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, his own resources, and set him on his own beast. He sacrificed, you know, part of what he walked so this guy could ride. And brought him to an inn and took care of him, even paid for a room. you see, gave of himself. This guy was more important than his own needs at that time because he was in need. And that's the way we try to live as representatives of God on earth. Other people are important to us, more important than ourselves many times. Now you have to take heed unto yourself and make sure you're okay, but you're not just all wrapped up in yourself. You're more wrapped up in helping others. God first, others second. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence and gave them to the host and said unto them, take care of him. And whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. He sacrificed a lot of stuff to help that guy. Which now of these 3 thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among thieves? And he said, he that showed what? The answer to the question, who is my neighbor? Apparently, is what? Is that saying, it says he that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus unto him, go and do thou likewise. You go help people too. Jesus didn't answer the question. The guy did. And Jesus told him something different. Go and help people. And that's what we ought to do. Look at Philippians again. 2. You know, if in the body of Christ I'm concerned about you, who's going to be concerned about me? Maybe you. We'll help each other through the back door, you know? I'm trying to help this person, someone trying to help me. It works that way. We're all concerned about each other. Not busybodies, but we all care about each other. And it's a good way to live. God first, others second, and I'm willing to be third. Philippians 2 verse 3 says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind. And lowliness of mind simply means humility. And it means you don't think that you are the most important being on the planet. You don't think that you have to be taken care of first before anyone else. You don't think that your needs and your problems are more important than anyone else's. You are willing, it comes from a word that means you're willing to go low. And it doesn't mean crawl on your stomach like a worm. It means you're willing to go underneath people and hold them up instead of climbing on top of people and hold yourself up. You're willing to go underneath and help others. And that's what it means, I am willing to be third. In Philippians 2, verse 3, it says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem. Esteem means to look or to inspect or to regard or observe, to contemplate. Let each esteem other better than themselves. And better simply means more important. Isn't that cool? Just like that person's important. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the what? Don't just look at your own stuff, but look also, be interested also in the affairs, in how other people are doing. And that means that in your mind, you think of believers as important to you. You think of people as important, and you're willing to set aside some of your own needs or whatever, or problems, or time, in order to try to help someone else. In your mind, are people here for you, or are you here for people? Number one, you're here for who? God. That's number one. But number two, as you go into a group of people, say like today, or you hang around with a few people, are you evaluating them by how they are for you? How they treat you? How they make you feel? What they do for you? In your mind, are they here for you? Or are you here for them? Are you just thinking, what can I do for that person? How can I help that person? Is there anything I can do for this person? I'm here for them. And what we are is we think we are here to help. We're sons of God. God is first in our lives. We've gotten to know God, and he would like us to be a help to people. And we are here for people. All right? So it's a good saying to live by. And it is, when love is not madness, it is not love. Or another good one is, God first, others second, I'm willing to be third. All right? Okay, so Joel, you want to have a word of prayer?